The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. The aftermath of violence, however, is bitterness. And this is the thing I'm concerned about. Let us fight passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of justice and freedom. But let's be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love, so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation have completely crumbled in Montgomery, that we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
Good morning. My name is John Shuck, and this is The Beloved Community on KBOO. This is a special edition of The Beloved Community, calling it the Nakba, 70 Years of Oppression, 1948 to 2018. The Beloved Community is heard every second Friday at 9 o'clock on KBOO. You can catch podcasts of this show and my weekly syndicated program, Progressive Spirit, at progressivespirit.net. May 14th marks the 70th anniversary of Israel's statehood. Palestinians refer to this as the Nakba, or the catastrophe, when more than 700,000 Palestinians left their homes from fear or were forcibly removed by Israelis who took their homes. On the 70th anniversary of the occupation, the people of Gaza have been staging a nonviolent demonstration, the Great March of Return, that culminates on Tuesday the 15th. According to the Middle Eastern Monitor, the demonstrations of the Great March of Return and Breaking the Siege started on March 30th, 2018. Since then, Israeli forces have killed 53 demonstrators and wounded more than 8,500 others. On the special edition of The Beloved Community, my guests will speak about the ongoing Nakba, the ongoing catastrophe for the people of Palestine and Gaza, from their unique perspectives. Retired Episcopal priest Richard Toll of Portland is president of the Board of Trustees of Friends of Sabeel North America. Reverend Toll received an honorary doctorate from the Church Divinity School of the School of the Pacific in Berkeley, California, for his commitment to justice and peace in the Holy Land. And I'm going to speak with Reverend Toll later in the hour. My first guest is Wada Sofan. Wada Sofan is a Palestinian native. He's been in the U.S. since 1996. He lives in Portland. He's in a wheelchair, paralyzed for life. At the age of 17, he was shot by Israeli soldiers in the spine during the first Intifada of 1989. He was jailed three times by the Israelis as a teenager. He'll be talking a little bit about that. He came to the United States, completed degrees in computer science and conflict management. He considers himself part of Palestinian, American, Muslim, Middle Eastern, people of color, and disabled communities. He has a family obligation this morning, so he couldn't be with me live, but he graciously recorded an interview with me over the phone on Wednesday. It's about 15 minutes. This is my conversation with Wada Sofan. I'm speaking with Wada Sofan. Wada, welcome to the Beloved Community.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me over.
We are now coming up on the 70th anniversary of the Nakba, and you had lived in Palestine. You've been in the United States for, what, over 20 years now, but can you tell me where you lived in Palestine?
I lived in West Bank, a city called Nablus, which is used to be under occupation, now is under Palestinian control. But I'm originally from historical Palestine, from near Yaffa, a city called Sidna Ali, the Hebrew names for it, Herzliya. That's where my dad and my grandfather from.
And did your family lose their home during the Nakba?
Yes, my dad started a family. We lost a lot of lands and homes. I remember when I was a kid, my dad took me a trip to the historical Palestine, and he showed me the place he born at. And that's a sparkled things in my mind and my heart, and make me wonder when I was a kid, how did that happen? So as I grow, I start realizing that the occupation does exist, and the occupation is, I start knowing about the history of Palestine. This was when I was 8 years old, and the knowledge started growing. I'm getting interested in knowing about our history, what happened to our land, and who are those people who come and took the land. It was amazing, and I was devastated to know that my grandfather lost all his land, and we cannot have access to it. no longer we can visit that place.
Your grandfather had the deed to his property. Is that still in your family?
Yes, we have a deed. We have like we have old paper, and we have also receipts that my grandfather used to pay taxes to the Turkish Empire during that time.
What happened to him? He lost his house, so where did he go?
Well, people start fearing, you know, the occupation and the massacre were committed against civilians, and many villages were destroyed. People fear for their life. So my grandfather escaped with his family. They flee to West Bank, and we ended up in the city of Nablus, and that's where I born.
And that's where you were born, in Nablus. You were in a wheelchair. You are paralyzed, I assume, from the waist down. You were wounded. How did that happen, and who is responsible?
It happened during the first uprising, or the Intifada, first Intifada in 1989. As a kid, I grew up under the sound of bullets, the smell of the tear gas, and the hold up at the checkpoints. This is traumatized childhood, you know, grows in me and make me question and make me get more involved with the Palestinian rights of return and ending the occupation. That's what get me to go on the streets and just to throw rocks. On the night of 1989, on September 29th, I was got shot by an Israeli forces. When I got shot, I did not realize what happened to me. I was in a coma for almost 7 days. I wake up in the Israeli hospitals, and I realize that I might be get wounded, and might be get shot. I did not realize that. Still lacking, I'm traumatized, and still waking up unconscious. Then I knew probably they arrested me after I got shot. And
so you were arrested after you were shot?
Yes, actually, you know, my life is started with the occupation stopped when I was 16 years old. When I get encountered with Israelis, and when they captured me on the streets, and they took me to Israeli jails, and interrogate me, and investigate me, and beat me, and questioning me. And when I was 16 years old, I was terrified and traumatized by the interrogation of the Israeli Shin Bet, or the intelligence service. That's the first encounter. When I got arrested in 1987, second time. And the first time in 1989, before my injury, and so I've been three times in Israeli jails. And the last time, after I got released in 2 weeks, I got shot.
Tell me again, you were arrested three times. What was your crime?
Crime is protesting on the street and be part of a resistance on the street, forming groups, and joining together and throwing rocks at the Israeli soldiers.
How many young men from Palestine have been wounded and have been jailed and traumatized, as you talk about?
I know a lot. You know, I have at least 5-6 friends who are spinal cord injuries, and they get shot and ended using a wheelchair. I think during that time in 1989, the Israeli forces are intended to shoot young Palestinians and cripple them on purpose so they can have people fear the injury and not to participate in rejecting the occupation or protesting the occupation.
I mean, make sure I heard you right. You just said that the Israeli forces would target young people to cripple them on purpose.
Yes,
to put fear in. And as this is happening right now on the border of Gaza, the people of Gaza will engage in a nonviolent return march on the 15th for the past, since March, have been out near the wall. How are you feeling about this? Are you concerned about what might happen on the 15th?
Of course. It means a lot. The anniversary of the Nakba, which is 7 years of the occupation, brutal occupation of the land of Palestine by the Zionist movement. So 7 years under occupation, 7 years under unjust. It means I was displaced and replaced by other people who has no right to be in Palestine in the first place. It means I was betrayed by the international community. It means to me that justice and human rights does not exist for the Palestinians. Means that the whole international community are not protesting, not doing anything to protect the civilians and the youth of Palestinians who get shot and arrested on a daily basis.
Are you concerned that this might actually be a massacre on the 15th?
Of course. The Israeli, in a sense, the marches start on March 15th, I believe. Israeli occupation military forces responded with lethal force, deploying troops using drones, tanks, and snipers, who fired on the crowds using live fire, live bullets, rubber coated steel bullets, and tear gas. Israeli occupation since then has announced that the protest would be met with lethal violence. The reporters have found that protesters are neither factionals, they don't belong to any faction, nor pose any threat to Israel or to the Israeli soldiers, and still soldiers continue to instruct to use lethal force in violation of the international law.
I was speaking with Norman Finkelstein recently, and he mentioned that the point of the lethal violence on behalf of the Israelis is simply to provoke a violent response in some way back, some kind of thing to justify actually more destruction and killing. What do you think about that?
Well, I believe this is part of what Trump of American administrations has announced, the deal of the century, is they tried to provoke Hamas to use violence so they can justify their action, and they can probably launch a war against Hamas to pass the deal of the century, because they know Hamas is opposing the deal that Trump's promoting in the Middle East, that ripping off the Palestinians' land and moving the American embassy to Jerusalem. So they see Hamas as an obstacle toward achieving their goals. So they try to provoke Hamas so they can justify the violence.
But the reality on the ground is that the people of Gaza really don't have any weapons anyway. I mean, whatever these things that are called rockets are, Finkelstein calls them nothing more than enhanced fireworks. I mean, there's really nothing there. One of the powerful militaries of the world, Israel, can't be militarily afraid of people coming up to a fence.
Yes, those rocket fires, fireworks, they're really ineffective, and they barely reach the border. And Israel is, of course, controlling the media and claiming that those rockets are harming the settlers who live on the border of Gaza. And this is a threat to the state of Israel. And that's why they justify their action. You know, Palestine and Gaza, they live under a crippling blockade enforced by Israel and Egypt, has created a condition of permanent crisis. Poverty, 65%, unemployment, around 45%. So people are really frustrated now, and they have no option but to die with dignity. What the choice that people in Gaza have, condition in Gaza have worsened. An estimate of 96% of the groundwater supplies is undrinkable. The Trump administration cut in half the funding to the United States Nation Agency of the Palestinian Refugee Funds. Nobody really stands with them, you know, and Israel with the blockade is preventing anybody to help with medical aid and supplies and support to the Palestinians. For they need to go to their homes. They need to have the international committee enforces the laws of right of returns for the Palestinians to their homes, which is in the historical Palestine, which is what's so-called Israel right now. Maybe 60% of Mr. Trump's cabin is consist of Zionists who are pro-Israel. The Palestinians see there is no hope, seeing the Americans as a mediator in the peace process. So that's why they decided to choose Europe or Russia to be a mediator for peace in the Middle East.
Final question here for you. What do you want people to know about Israel, Palestine, and Gaza, and what can people of good conscience do to support the people of Gaza right now on this historic anniversary coming up on the 15th, the nonviolent return march?
Well, I want the international committee to know that there is Palestinians are treated unjust, and their land has been ripped away from them. Their basic life, their basic human right, has been taken away from them, and these people, they have right to to exist. They have right to return to their homes. They have right to end the occupations. They have right to be independent as any other countries that have their own independence. They have their own flags. They have their own national anthem. They have their own freedom. I am with the Gazans. I wish I could go there and, you know...
If you were there, would you participate? Would you participate in the march if you were there?
I would, yeah, I would. I would. I'm jailed. I've been shot by Israelis. I'm not afraid, and I think they will. Being in a wheelchair, it won't prevent them from shooting me. You know, the young man called Ibrahim Abu Thuraya, he's a Palestinian activist who lost his legs in the airstrikes, has been shot dead by Israeli troops as he protested against the U.S. decision to recognize Jerusalem as capital of Israel. I know Israelis, they don't fear. They will keep committing crimes against the Palestinians with the cover under the American administrations.
I guess I do have one final question for you, Wada Sofan, and that is, what makes the people of Gaza so resilient and strong in the face of all of this?
Well, it's something basic, you know, dying with dignity is better dying with humiliation. People are hopeless down there in Gaza. I really support their cause, support the cause for freedom and being independent. Those people have been forgotten. Those people have been under blockade for decades now. The economy is really worsened. People have no choice but to protest, but to reject the occupations. And to end the occupations, and they need to bring their voice to the international committee and bring attention of the international committee to start moving and do something in regard to the situations. And we hope the international committee will prevent the massacres. It might be committed on the 15th of May. That's the big march is going to happen, and I hope no casualties will result in that. I hope that the Israeli government will stop using violence against the Palestinians. I will say, go Gaza, and I'm in solidarity with Gaza.
Sounds like you're making an appeal to the rest of humanity to be human beings.
Of course, of course. I mean, we've been under occupation for 7 years, and the international laws and the international community, I believe they are on our side. But to pass those laws and to through the United Nations resolution, through the Security Council of the United Nations, America have to stop vetoing any resolution towards the Palestinian rights. I think if America stop being pro-Israel, I think the Palestinian crisis will end soon.
I've been speaking with Wada Sofan. He's a resident of Portland. I grew up in Palestine, was wounded by Israeli soldiers, paralyzed, now is in a wheelchair. But you completed a degree in computer science, and then you went on in conflict resolution. Is that right?
Yes, I'm trying not to understand the conflict. I went to study conflict resolution, and my thesis was about restorative justice, using tools to restore justice for the Palestinians, and also to open talks with the Israelis, and to find a resolution for the conflict in the Middle East.
Thank you for that work, and thanks for being with me today.
Thank you very much, John, for having me.
And you just heard a recorded interview with Wada Sofan, a victim of the Nakba, the catastrophe, 70 years running. More to come on the special broadcast of The Beloved Community, The Nakba, 70 Years of Oppression, 1948 to 2018. I'm John Shack. This is The Beloved Community. That's a portion of the song London to Gaza from international jazz artist Gilad Atzmon and the Orient House Ensemble. That's from his 2010 album, The Tide Has Changed. This is The Beloved Community. I'm John Shuck on KBOO. The special here is the Nakba, 70 Years of Oppression, 1948 to 2018. Also in the studio with me is Dick Toll of Friends of Sabeel. He's going to be coming up in just a second. Gilad Atzmon is on tour through America. He's going to be in Portland on Monday and Tuesday, Monday, May 14th. It'll be an evening of jazz with Gilad Atzmon and some fine Portland jazz musicians at Southminster Presbyterian Church on the corner of Denny and Hall in Beaverton. That'll be 7:30 Monday, the 14th. Then on Tuesday, May 15th, Gilad Atzmon will be at the Clackamas Truth and Inquiry Group at Denny's Banquet Room. This is on 15815 Southeast 82nd Drive in Clackamas. You can find out about that at the Clackamas Truth and Inquiry Group meetup, or go to gilad.co.uk. That's from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesday the 15th. Gilad Atzmon is being sued for libel by the High Court of England by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism's chairman Gideon Falter. Gilad feels that this is attack on free speech. I was told by some Palestinian activists that Gilad Atzmon was not good for the Palestinian cause. And so I asked Wada Sofan about that, and this is what he said. Gilad Atzmon is going to be on the program. He'll be probably after you via phone or something. Do you know him?
Oh, I know him. I met him in person here in Portland. He considers himself a Palestinian. That's wonderful. And they talk about a lot about Jewish identity and nationality.
Yeah, he's going to be in Portland this week, Monday. He's actually going to be doing a jazz concert at my church. I'm also a minister. I'm a minister at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton.
Amazing. I get an email from Tim inviting me to come over, and I hope to have the time.
Oh, good.
And,
okay.
Be able to attend. Thanks.
All right. So you don't necessarily feel that his presence is against the Palestinian cause? I got some emails about that.
Oh, no, he's not. I think he's a pro-Palestinian. He considered himself a Palestinian. He said he was born in Palestine. He did not born in Israel.
Wada Sofan talking about Gilad Atzmon. Gilad Atzmon, his latest book is Being in Time, a Post-Political Manifesto, and his latest jazz album is The Spirit of Train. Talking about John Coltrane with the Orient House Ensemble. Gilad Atzmon, are you there? Welcome to the Beloved Community.
Wow, it was very very exciting for me. First, I was shocked to hear my music. You know, I usually don't listen to my music. And then to hear such an endorsement for a person who paid so heavily for being a Palestinian and being a subject of this brutality. I'm very happy to be with you, and I actually see it in my eyes.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You were scheduled to speak last night, I believe, in Madison, Wisconsin, but the venue canceled you after a smear campaign. How often does this happen?
It doesn't happen a lot, and I must say that we don't face much opposition at the moment in America. Did you face any kind of opposition in Portland? I don't know of anything.
Well, yeah. We didn't. I didn't promote you very much because I was concerned about that.
So this is how it works. No, you should promote me because I'm a person who tried to push for peace and justice. So you shouldn't be afraid of it. But I think that the fact that I am subject to so many attempts and slander, and you know, people try to stop me from doing what I'm doing, only suggest that I'm on the right course, and a lot of people know it. It was shocking to see how many people stood up for me. Now you mentioned this court case, and I'll tell you something that may surprise you: the first people to send donations to support my legal action were from Israel. And in fact, the second biggest donation, and I'm talking about thousands of dollars, came from an Israeli. So I think that the support that I am receiving worldwide now is really big, and this is why there is such a desperation around my work. Now, as you probably know, and I challenge many of my opponents, I said, if you think that I've, in my entire career, I've ever criticized, not just Jews, anyone, as a biology, as a race, as people, as an ethnicity, point at it. Show me where. I will be the first to issue an apology, and I will depart from this discourse and leave you in peace. My entire work is concerned with identity, with ideologies, with cultures, and I'm particularly interested in Jewish culture because it's a dominant culture, and it is its influence in America, especially now with the Trump administration, is beyond significance, and I think that people should understand what they are dealing with, what they are up against. It is very, very sophisticated, especially because all of that is done in the open, yet we are not allowed to speak about it freely. This is a very interesting construct. As you probably know, I define Jewish power as the power to suppress opposition of Jewish power. Now, I dedicated my life, actually, to prove that Jewish power doesn't exist because I'm trying to criticize Jewish power in the open. And what I do in practice, I actually help people to see who are those who are facilitating this power. So the people who may call you to tell you that I'm dangerous, they are actually the people who facilitate this power. And as we know, many of them are actually operating within the Palestinian solidarity as Jewish voices. And one of the things that I've done in my work, and I realized immediately that I didn't need the people to oppose me to know that I'm marching on a very dangerous path. What I really did, I argued that the problem is not the Jewish people, because we know a lot of great Jewish people. The problem is not Judaism, as we all know that some of the greatest supporters of Palestine are actually a Jewish Orthodox sect, the Turekata Torah Jews, and so on and so on. The problem is Jewishness. Those who identify politically as Jews. And unfortunately, when it comes to those who identify politically as Jews, we see a continuum between Bibi Netanyahu and Avigdor Lieberman, to the most radical progressive Jews, such as JVP. And in my work, I show how they have managed to cause quite serious damage to the Palestinian solidarity. So, for instance, instead of talking about the right of return, which is the core of the Palestinian cause, they introduce all those alternative ideas such as the end of the occupation. End of the occupation sounds great, but it's actually a legitimacy of the Jewish state, and it is actually turning and deviating the discourse from the right of return, because if the Jewish state exists, there is no right of return. Colonialism. They insisted upon talking about the colonialism. It's not colonialism. Colonialism is a clear exchange, material exchange, between a mother state and a settler state. This is not the case in Israel. We have a settler state, we don't have a mother state. It's not apartheid. It is way worse than apartheid. Apartheid is a racist system of exploitation. Israel is the racist system of ethnic cleansing. It is, I'm so very sorry to say it, and you may be even upset to hear it, a racist system of of ethnic cleansing, of expulsion, is basically an Hitlerian concept. So I understand the Jews are upset by me saying it, but what we have to do is to deal with those issues as they are, to call a spade a spade.
Well, that's what you certainly have your opinions out there and are very controversial. A bit of a lightning rod. Gilad Atzmon is speaking with me. This is the question that comes up. Let's deal with this one. Are you a Holocaust denier? And what does the label Holocaust denier mean?
Let me make it very simple for you.
That would be good.
I'll make it very, very simple. As you probably know, the legislation against Holocaust deniers in Europe, especially in Germany and Austria, is beyond severe. People who deny the Holocaust are thrown to jail. Now, as it happens, I'm not just playing in Germany on a regular basis and doing residencies in the capital, in Berlin, twice a year. I hold a post in Germany. I'm a head of a music festival in Germany, all right? So if they would have any evidence to suggest that I am a Holocaust denier, I would be behind bars in Germany rather than a popular artist and a cultural figure. However, my position on the Holocaust is very clear. I do believe that history becomes a meaningful adventure when we are capable of rethinking it, the past. When we can revisit the past, when we can draw some different conclusion for the way we understand the past. And I believe that stopping us from doing such a thing in regard to certain chapters in our past makes these chapters into religions. And this definitely applies to the Holocaust. I believe that if the Holocaust would be treated as an historical chapter, then we will be able to draw the right ethical meaning and to understand that what we are doing in Palestine is a Holocaust. What America, Israel, Britain has done to Syria, Iraq, Libya, these are Holocausts. And I definitely oppose the idea of the primacy of Jewish suffering. For me, suffering of all human beings is equal. And if this makes me a Holocaust denier, I understand. I understand that some people are upset by what I'm saying. I, rather than denying chapters in history, I say the opposite. I say let's open everything to scrutiny.
Gilad Atzmon, my guest on the Beloved Community, talking about Holocaust. Well, what does it mean? But why is that one? That one seems a pretty big smear to call someone a Holocaust denier, and nobody wants to touch you. And that's even bigger than anti-Semitism or conspiracy theorist, it seems.
So let me. You know, as you probably know, that 2 months ago I was invited to the fourth Palestinian Convention in Beirut, and they gave me an award for my work for Palestine. This week, I was supposed to be in Istanbul. I decided to be in America and to talk to you people. I was there. I was invited to get an award for Al-Quds. So it is not really true that people don't want to touch me. I do understand that the Saudis, like JVP and their proxy operators, I think that there were 20 Palestinians who signed a call from Addis Ababa. They, and even by now we know now that it was written, this call from Addis Ababa was actually written by a British Jew. That, funny enough, was expelled from the Labour Party from being an anti-Semite a month ago. So some people try to stop me from talking, and they use the Holocaust as the Holocaust, or Holocaust denial, as a smear, in order to get their campaign through. But I must admit that looking at the popularity of my website, looking at my extensive tours, I managed to prevail. And the next question is, why did I manage to get through this nonsense while other people have been crushed? And this is a question that bothers me a lot, and I'm not so sure that I have produced the right answers yet. But one of the answers is that I operate completely alone. If you will come to me, and we probably agree on many things, or maybe on everything, but if you come to me and say, Gilad, let's form a campaign together, let's act together, I'll tell you, I'm not too sure that it's the right thing for me, because this would mean that at a certain stage, I will have to take your sensitivities into consideration, and this may stop me from telling the truth as I see it. For me, telling the truth, aiming at the truth, is the real meaning of seeking Athens, and this is what is I offer as a remedy for the Western universe as I see it.
All right, Gilad Atzmon, you will be doing some of that here in Portland on May 14th, an evening with jazz with Gilad Atzmon and some fine Portland jazz musicians at Southminster Presbyterian Church on the corner of Denny and Hall in Beaverton. That's at 7:30 Monday. And then on Tuesday, May 15th, the Clackamas Truth and Inquiry Group welcome you to Denny's Banquet Room. That's on Southeast 82nd Drive in Clackamas, Oregon, and that will be from 7 to 9 p.m. I just have about 30 seconds. Can you just tell me kind of what you'll be saying, what you'd like people to know?
I will probably talk about the meaning of truthfulness. How did it happen to all of us that we cannot really tell things as they are? Why do we need a movement for truth in America in 2018? I believe that by now we are all Palestinians. Like the Palestinians, we cannot utter the name of our oppressor, and this will have to change.
Gilad Atzmon, thank you for taking time with me on your journey. Looking forward to seeing you Monday, sir.
You're wonderful. Thank you so much.
That was Gilad Atzmon. He is, like I mentioned, he's going to be in Portland more Monday, May 14th and 15th. You can find more information about him on his webpage, www.gilad.co.uk. And about the details about this meeting on Tuesday at the Clackamas Truth and Inquiry Group Meetup. Search that and you'll find out more information. Dick Toll is in the studio with me. We're going to talk about being a friend on The Beloved Community up next. That was Gilad Atzmon and the Orient House Ensemble, Gaza Mon Amour, from his 2015 album, The Whistleblower. Richard Toll is a retired Episcopal priest. He serves as priest associate. Is that the right title?
Yes.
Okay. At Grace Memorial Episcopal Church in Portland, he's president. Okay. He's president of the Board of Trustees of Friends of Sabeel North America. The acronym for that is FOSNA, F-O-S-N-A. Reverend Toll received an honorary doctorate from the Church Divinity School of the Pacific in Berkeley, California, for his commitment to justice and peace in the Holy Land. And he's with me today to talk about Friends of Sabeel and of course, all of the issues in Palestine and Gaza. Welcome, Dick, to the Beloved Community.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be here and glad to have a chance to be, as I told you, back on the radio again. I used to be on radio when I was in college, so it's nice to be with you. I very much appreciate the fact of your ongoing Nakba, because I've experienced that since my first visit in '83. Things just seem to get worse and worse, and I like to look at the symbol of Bethlehem. When I first went there in 1983, the mayor of Bethlehem announced the fact when I was there in March that 89% of that Bethlehem in '83 has been confiscated for roads, for the wall, for settlements.
So since 1983, 89% of the Bethlehem you visited there is
yes.
Not. Okay.
It's not there. And, of course, you can see that in the way in which the patterns of the Christian community have developed there. It was 80% in '83. Now it's around 12%, 15%, somewhere in there. So the ongoing Nakba is affecting all the people, but especially the Christian community there that I'm aware of, because that's the one that I pay attention to with the people I know and work with since 1983.
People often don't even realize that there are Christians in Palestine, and there are Christians before Israel, Palestinian Jews as well in Palestine.
Exactly. One of the friends that I work with there, it was a part of the fire ceremony at Easter in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And he's honored in a sense because he's one of the people that lights the fire and does the special lighting of the fire. And he's honored because his family goes back to the Pentecost. And that family is honored because of that.
Now, you are involved with Friends of Sabeel. I guess my question is, how can we be a friend right now in this time?
Sabeel is an Arabic word meaning the way, and Sabeel in Jerusalem got started about 25, 27 years ago with the leadership of Naeem Atik, who I went to seminary with in 1960.
Oh, really?
Yes, I went to seminary with him in 1964, 5, 6. And so we've known each other since then, and I had never heard the Palestinian story until I talked to him. And I'll have to say I didn't believe him. Why wouldn't I know that story? Because I'd never heard it in 1964 when he told his story of 8 years old being forced from his village and all of his family. I had never heard that. And ever since then, I've been going over to see him and have found out how much my ignorance is in need of repair. And that's part of why I'm doing what I'm doing, because the church is ignorant of what this issue is. You're interviewing people that know a lot about it because they live with it.
Uh-huh.
We deny it in this country, or we don't even know about it.
Yeah. And that isn't just happenstance, I don't think.
People don't want to get involved with this issue for whatever reason, and especially, I don't know why, but the church tries to stay away from it. And
I can imagine clergy don't want to have the division within their congregations.
Exactly,
they don't want
right.
conflicts,
yeah.
And it's not their conflict. So
they stay away from it. The issue that I find is true is when people go and find out what's on the ground, their lives change. That's what happened to me, because, like I say, I go back almost every year. And sometimes
do you? You go every year. So you've been a Hamath 30, 40 times then?
Over 30. Yeah.
Over 30 times.
Yeah.
And you can see that as you bring people there for the first time, you can see the change happening within them as they see what's going on?
Yes. And we were there just before Easter this spring with 17 people from our church. And the questions and the learnings both beforehand and even now are profound. People now know that there's another question to ask because they know how to ask it in a different way than before they went. It's a life-changing situation for people in all kinds of ways.
I want to talk to you. You had mentioned when we talked off air about a taxation program for churches and mosques. Tell me about that. I'm speaking with Reverend Dick Toll of Friends of Sabeel.
When we were there this past March, it was right after the Church of the Holy Sepulchre had been closed for the first time in a long time, for 3 days. Why was it closed? There's a taxation program that the municipality of Jerusalem now is putting on the churches. And they're emboldened because of this whole issue of the capital and taking over more land and wanting to do whatever it is to get more land. And so they're putting back taxes in the amount of $200 million almost on all of the church's lands, and especially those that are restaurants or hotels, and education programs, schools. And the one that's affected the most is the Greek Orthodox. Our Anglican church is affected because I think $18 million, but this goes back to 1967, and they've closed the bank accounts. So the churches they had been closed when I was there. So in effect, the churches are trying to figure out how to get together to say this is wrong and how to get the word out to other people like we're doing now. Because, again, we don't know that these problems are there, and it's not in our media.
So they are getting taxed out of existence then.
This is what the danger is. And, of course, it's being fought and whatever it is that needs to be done, and the churches are trying to... They are together on this issue. They're very separate often, but on this issue. I'll just tell you something from The Guardian because it's a quick read on it. The churches say they're facing onslaught on three fronts, a war. This is from The Guardian newspaper, and this was on the 2nd of May. A war of attrition waged by hardline settlers, unprecedented tax demands by Jerusalem City Council, and a proposal to allow the expropriation of church land sold to private developers. Theophilus III, the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem and the most senior Christian leader in the Holy Land, told The Guardian, "Today the church faces a most severe threat at the hands of certain settler groups. The settlers are persistent in their attempts to erode the presence of the Christian community in Jerusalem. These radical settler groups are highly organized. Over the last years, we have witnessed the desecration and vandalism of an unprecedented number of churches and holy sites, and receive growing numbers of reports from priests and local worshipers who have been assaulted and attacked." And so that all of this has been happening over the years, but now it's coming to a frame of reference on taxation, and that's very serious.
Dick Toll, reading from The Guardian. What's that article that you're reading?
It's from the 2nd of May, and Christians in Jerusalem's Old City under threat from settlers.
Now, what is the, is there a website where people might be able to go to find out more about the particular, this taxation issue, or? Perhaps on the Friends of Sabeel North America, you might.
We will be having.
You'll be having some articles about that. Tell me more about how people might wish to get involved in Friends of Sabeel North America and some of the things that you do.
We are an ecumenical organization in Jerusalem, and when we're friends in North America, we have friends in Australia, Germany, Great Britain. We're a worldwide organization, so we're Friends of Sabeel, which is in Jerusalem. And we do education with programs in churches and all kinds of programs that we put together ecumenically in different churches. We are primarily a Palestinian liberation movement theology. And so we highlight that as the basis of our theology.
Well, that's at the title, I think, of Naeem Atik's last book is Palestine Liberation Theology.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're trying to, he's on a book tour right now in Atlanta, Georgia, and Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. That book is very important if people would like to have a copy of that. I've got copies, and they can be ordered. We're doing something with seminary programs, trying to say that some of the source of the problem is the fact that our seminaries are not training people on this issue. Hmm. And we want to have Palestinian liberation theology highlighted in seminaries and in programs that people are having in their churches. And we stress nonviolence completely and totally.
And that's what's happening right now this in Gaza, this great March of Return demonstration that's been going on since March 30th and really culminates on Tuesday, May 15th, is a nonviolent. I mean, even if they wanted to be violent, the best they got are rocks and fireworks, but it's not violent. And yet the response to that is violent. Can you tell me your thoughts about what's happening right now?
Well, I weep literally for yeah. what's going on. I was there 3 years ago, and I felt the oppression there when I was in Gaza. We have a hospital there in Gaza, and it's frightening to see what is happening to the people that are being injured, killed. But it's also frightening to realize that those young people that are doing the shooting, what's that doing to their soul? What's that doing to the soul of Israel? What's that doing to the larger community of who we are as a people to allow that to happen? So I really feel as though this is a tragedy that is just ongoing again, Nakba.
And if there be one thing that you'd like, say, Americans, people who are listening to this broadcast to do, is it what it would be? Include be more aware.
Be more aware and educate yourself. We're not able to really get as involved as we need to without knowing what we're talking about. So this program, your interviews, and those are the ways in which we become educated. And go over and find out for yourself.
Go over, because, in fact, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. Going over with you again. So you got another trip when?
In March next year, the International Conference. It's not dated yet, but we have international conferences in Jerusalem and Bethlehem.
And your website is what, Friends of Sabeel North America, what is that?
Friends of Sabeel North America.
That's it. That'll do it. Okay, FOSNA.org. Now, there's also a movie coming out that you've been working on for about 10 years.
Yes, and it's being presented all over the world, really. The name of it is 1948, Creation and Catastrophe, the ongoing destruction of the ongoing Nakba.
And that is being released soon?
Yes, it's... the trailer's on the internet, and you can look it up by 1948.
Okay. Dick Toll, my guest on the Beloved Community. We're out of time. An event coming up May 15th, Tuesday, Jewish Voice for Peace Nakba Day Rally. That's going to be at 3:30 outside the Portland office of U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley on One World Trade Center on Southwest Salmon in Portland. Also, other events coming on. I want to thank my guests, Wada Sofan, for being with me. He was injured, crippled by Israelis when he was 17 years old. Now works on conflict resolution. I saw a video of him, and he said that if I ever were up to meet that Israeli soldier who shot me, I'd forgive. Mm-hmm. That brought tears to my eyes too. That's coming up then Tuesday, May 15th. Gilad Atzmon at the Clackamas Truth and Inquiry Group, 7 to 9 p.m. at Denny's Banquet Room in Clackamas, Oregon. That follows the rally at the One World Trade Center. And an evening of jazz with Gilad Atzmon, Monday, May 14th at Southminster Presbyterian Church, Denny and Hall in Beaverton. Information about those things, Clackamas Truth Inquiry Group meet. FOSNA, FOSNA.org is for Dick Toll's organization, Friends of Sabeel. We're going to close out with Gilad Atzmon's Giant Steps from his 2017 album, The Spirit of Train. Of course, that spirit is the spirit of John Coltrane. This is the Beloved Community. I'm John Shuck. Be well.